Okay. The record will include the application and supporting materials, the summary and recording of this hearing, exhibits, any briefs or memorandum from the applicant or staff, and all written public comment. A copy of the application materials and all exhibits are on the table here for people to review. Okay, today's variance site is located in the town of Dresden, Washington County, in an area designated as moderate intensity use on the Adirondack Park Land Use and Development Plan map. Under agency regulations, structures greater than 100 square feet must be set back 50 feet from the mean high watermark in areas designated moderate intensity use. The applicant requests a variance from the minimum 50-foot setback to the mean high watermark of Lake George. The variance request involves the demolition of an existing single-family dwelling and replacing it with a single-family dwelling partially within the 50-foot shoreline structure setback. The replacement dwelling will cover the existing dwelling footprint. There will be approximately 253 square feet of additional footprint within the setback area. The height of the dwelling within the setback will be approximately 10 feet higher, and the width will be 11.5 feet wider than the pre-existing dwelling. The variance request is for the additional 253 square feet of footprint and 10 feet of height within the shoreline setback area. The proposal requires a variance pursuant to the Adirondack Park Agency Act 806, 1A2, and NYCRR Parts 576. The agency board may vary the shoreline restrictions if the applicant establishes that there are practical difficulties or unnecessary hardships in carrying out the strict letter of these restrictions. I'm going to now read the variance criteria. The board considers the following factors. Number one, whether the application requests the minimum relief necessary. Number two, whether the variance will create a substantial detriment to adjoining or nearby landowners. Number three, whether the difficulty can be obviated by a feasible method other than a variance. Number four, the manner in which the difficulty arose. Number five, whether granting the variance will adversely affect the natural, scenic, and open space resources of the park and any adjoining water body due to erosion, surface runoff, subsurface sewage effluent, change in aesthetic character, or any other impacts which would not otherwise occur. And sixth, whether the imposition of conditions upon the granting of the variance will ameliorate the adverse effects referred to in paragraph 5 above. Part 576 of the agency's regulations places the burden on the applicant to show that the variance is justified. At this point, we have an exhibit list we'd like to enter into the record. If there's no objections, it's exhibit list is 1 through 15. Are you good with that, everybody?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Exhibit list and exhibits.
And exhibits.
Yes.
So we have 15 exhibits for the record. At this point now, we will turn the proceedings over to the applicant to present.
Okay. Thanks, Keith. We're going to do...
Mr. David, yes, before I... Let me just...
Sure.
I have to swear you in for...
Oh, yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. You have to swear in.
So just please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in this matter?
I do.
And please state your name for the record.
William David Dow.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead.
So in terms of our suggestion, how to proceed is I'm going to give some of the background and deal with some of the criteria, and then Andrew, Michael, and then Kevin are going to deal with more of the design architectural issues and the environmental issues. So it's a little bit of a team approach here. So as I understand it, our principal purpose is to show that the denial of our application has more adverse consequences than the benefit to the public of granting it as the legal concept. And we believe, based on the work that we've done, that Andrew's done, Kevin has done, that not only can we meet those criteria, but that, in fact, the lake and the APA, let me just refer to it as the lake, because that's what we're all interested in, ends up benefiting more from this project than from the current house that is there or from a house that could be built outside the 50-foot setback with no rules or with limited rules. We're going to try and break it into a few parts. And it shouldn't take long, but we'd like to give you some background on the community, background on the trends in the community, background on our family, discuss the current house, discuss the proposed house, and then go into the criteria, because I think it all has to be done in context. The community itself, it is approximately 80 homes. It at one point prior to 1950 was a hotel and a resort with a 9-hole golf course, tennis courts, a bar and a restaurant on the water. It had a dormitory and fountains, gazebos, gardens, and everything that a lake resort would have. After 1950, the hotel was acquired by the Eichler family. The hotel was taken down. The bar and restaurant burned down. The dorm was eventually demolished and basically converted to a rental community, renting what had been some cottages in the property. Then ultimately, other cottages were added to the point where it's approximately 75. Was it approximately 75 cottages? Those cottages were for the most part rented to families from New York and from Boston. And over the course of probably 10 or 15 years, as you would expect, most of the cottages were purchased by the families who rented them, mostly large families who wanted to be here for the summer or parts of the summer. And over the course of, let's say, 20 years, I'd say that most of the cottages were sold. And eventually, the families became very close. My generation is close. My parents' generation is close. My kids' generation are all very close. And they're friends, not just here, but they're friends throughout the year, up and down the East Coast and now even spread out through the country. So it's a very important family place for everybody. And we're all close. We all support each other. After people acquired them, then gradually the cottages were all too small, and the trend in the community is to constantly improve them and upgrade them and make them larger to fit the family. That's been going on probably for the last 25 years. It's accelerating now. It's accelerating now at a pretty rapid pace, although most of the houses are outside the 50-foot line, so you won't necessarily see them. In the 90s, through a lot of effort and a lot of cost, the community basically obtained control and ownership of the amenities. The beach, we preserved the beach. We preserved what we call the village green. We preserved the golf course. We preserved all the things that made it special through a process in which the APA was actually involved through that nine-year process. And then after we acquired it, it's all been improved. There's an Adirondack pavilion. The gazebos have been rebuilt. The fountains have been rebuilt. The gardens, the tennis courts have been rebuilt. Golf course, it's still Adirondack-style golf, but it's totally upgraded since we took it over. But part of that upgrading is everybody upgrading their own personal situation. We put in a sewer system, so it has a municipal sewer system that we put in, which functions perfectly. And as of last spring, we took over the roads. The roads had been owned by the Eichler family, but last year they transferred the roads to the community, which the community owns through an LLC that's a subsidiary of the community association. So what we're proposing is consistent with the whole trend in the community. The our family is, it's now seven adults and spouses and significant others, two grandchildren, and a third on the way. We expect more. We want to use this as our house, and we all want to be together. At the current time, the house is, and this is, there's an exhibit, attachment 8B1, I'm sorry, the attachment 8B1 happens to have a picture of our current house.
Just for the record, that's part of Exhibit 1?
Yes.
Okay. It's
part of exhibit. It's part of exhibit one, and you can see it. It's 118 of lakefront. It's about a fifth of an acre, slightly more than a fifth of an acre. It's it has just two bedrooms, no closets. It's been basically untouched for 70 years. Has essentially no view of the lake because the bedrooms all are on the south side, where the sun would come in. No porches, no decks, one bathroom, and it really doesn't, with two bedrooms, it just doesn't even come close to fitting the family. When we were younger, when we bought it in 1995, the kids were young. We thought we'd expand it at a future time, and then, of course, and after we had the ability to do it financially because colleges were done and the kids were raised, that was after the 2008 or 2009 law came into effect, which again was 13 years after we purchased it. Our goal, and this was, I think, communicated to Andrew when we engaged him, and I think we've talked to in our various correspondence with the APA, and just one other thing, as you can see, not to demean our own property, it's not very attractive. It's just a, it's just a camp. And it's right on the lakefront. It has a prominent, it does have a prominent spot on the lakefront. But so what we said, we had three goals in talking to Andrew. We wanted to get light and air and view coming into the house, and also so we could see down the lake. Right now, there's inside the house is basically like a cave. We wanted to fit the family, have space for the family to enjoy the lake and the park and the community. And then lastly, of equal importance, we wanted something that was aesthetically really pleasing and Adirondack style, to fit in with the lake, to fit in with the way it should look, and also very sensitive to the fact that this is not back in the woods. If it doesn't look good, everybody would have to look at it, including us. And so we went, I think, to special effort. I think Andrew and Michael, in our opinion, did a great job doing satisfying those criteria. And it's a beautiful piece of work. And Kevin Hastings has worked with us on the environmental part, and he'll address that later. Andrew's going to get into the house more. It's a modest size, even though it's larger than the one we have. It's a modest size house, and all the rooms in it are modest size. The porch, which we think is crucial aesthetically and just for living, the outside porch is only 6.5 feet. Everything has been squeezed down. What you're seeing is, I think, the third or fourth iteration since we first met with Mr. Serig and others in Raybrook, and we have made, I want to list the following modifications that we've made since our first meeting. We lowered the roof. We moved the house away from the lake by 2 feet, not closer, not on. We moved the front of the house, proposed to go back 2 feet. We moved it over 4 feet because of the way the 50-foot setback line works. There's a little more room on that side, and 4 feet was as much as we felt it could be moved without impacting our neighbor's view. Made the house smaller, added rain gardens, which Kevin can address, and we clipped the front corners. To respond to a comment that the front porch had gone 6 feet closer to the lake, even though we said it was 6 inches closer to the lake, even though we had measured 2. So Andrew suggested we clip the corners, which we did. So that's the background. We've had 4, I guess, submissions. We've had December, February, May, and then a short one in June to explain our positions. I think that it's fully described in there. But if I could just go through, start the criteria and explain what our views are on the criteria, that would be appreciated. I think the key fact is that what we are asking for is some expansion of the existing footprint within the setback area, some expansion basically in some part to fit the front porch. It's a total request, as the notice said, of about 250 square feet of footprint that has not been, that is not now currently being used. And then the second piece is roof height. I believe the notice said we've asked for 10 feet. And again, Andrew's going to get into this in detail, but it's really 10 feet slope. So I think it's maybe it's 10 feet at the highest point, but it's not 10 feet total. That on your way up to 10 feet, or I'm sorry, when you get to 10 feet, it slopes down. So it's not as if it's just a 10-foot increase. It's a 10 feet at the top at the most, but Andrew will describe that. So those are the two things that we're looking for. It's 250 square feet on the ground, and then I think it's approximately, when you average it out, an 8 by 10 by 10 piece that allows for the front master bedroom. We think those are relatively minimal requests. We also believe that with respect to the square footage on the ground, that this project will improve the, let me call it the pervious layout of the land on a net basis, and that there'll be a net gain for the lake, and that even though there's a request for 250 feet, we're giving up what is a concrete 350 square foot concrete patio. We're giving up a shed, and a shed half of which is within the 50 feet. And then we move the house back 2 feet along the front expanse. That's 40 square feet, and then we have rain gardens of 180 square feet. So that's a total of 670 square feet of benefit provided by the project versus a 254 square foot request. And we think that's important to consider in terms of weighing what the impact of the request is on the on the lake. It's overall it's a net gain on the to the lake. On the height request, I think it's relatively minimal also. If we were, and again, Andrew will get into more detail on this, if we were to go behind the 50 and then put it up to 3 stories, that would be totally okay, as I understand it, but it would be taking, we're only, rather than do that and have something that's very unattractive, we're just asking for basically that 8 by 10 space at the front of the building. We think that's much better than it would be if we went with a structure with no rules outside 50 feet. The last one that I'm going to address, well, I'm going to address two things and turn it over to Andrew. The detriment to the adjoining and nearby landowners, each of the four, we live on a basically a dead-end street that has 5 other houses, one being my mother's, and then who is here, and then the other four have all submitted letters approving, indicating their approval of the project. There's no detriment, besides the fact that they've approved it, there's no detriment to them. And we've worked very hard to preserve their view. There is an aerial, just, and I think this is important because it's crucial to us not to impair their view. They're lifelong friends.
It's an exhibit 4.
An exhibit 4.
SP704.
Thank you.
There's an aerial view that shows how the neighbor's view comes, and this is how the community was designed. I'm sorry, I have it upside down for you. So this is one neighbor. Their view is through our side yard. That's all they have to get to the lake. And then our other neighbor over here has a view down our side yard. And if we were to move the house to either side or expand it to either side outside the 50 feet, which has been, I think, suggested through some of the APA discussions, we would block their view. So we don't feel, we think that would be first, a violation of criteria. Second of all, we just don't want to impact our neighbor's view. They're our friends, they're our children's friends, and just not going, just can't do it. We don't feel morally obligated not to impact their view. This neighbor has agreed to moving over 4 feet, as we said, because that 4 feet doesn't, they have a deck and a barbecue back here. They were okay moving at 4 feet. We moved the 4 feet just to improve our numbers outside the setback area. They're okay on that. But we don't feel there's any movement either way, and that's an important piece. So the answer is it doesn't act to the detriment of our neighbors, but something outside the 50-foot moving to the sides would. So that's a double, I think that's a double consideration there. And then the last one is, how did this hardship occur? It just occurred because we did it in 1995, and the law was enacted 13 years later. There's nothing we can do about that. And we do, as a family, respect the APA. We live on the lake. We care about the lake. We work hard to make this community better. Everything that's done is fitting to the Adirondack theme in the community. It's community-owned amenities. And so we take it seriously, but the law was after we purchased. So having said that, Andrew, can maybe you talk about the house, the things we're asking for, and then maybe the alternatives.
Thank you, sir. Any clarification?
I think we'll wait okay. until...
Council, why don't you swear to everybody in? The whole rest of the group can do that.
Sure.
Group
should have. Sure. And this is Mr. Chari?
Yes, what's your name?
Raise your right hand, please. And your...
Michael.
Okay. And Kevin Hastings. Okay. So I'm going to swear you all in at once. You all raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in this matter?
Yes.
Okay, please state your name for the record.
Andrew Chari. I do Michael Laramie.
Okay, and?
Kevin Hastings.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Andrew.
Thank you. I wanted to just highlight what Bill was talking about when he said he's shifting the house to the side because it's more favorable for the 50-foot shoreline setback. For this, I'd like to refer to the exhibits over here. This is ours, or this is
that's yours? Okay.
Let's find my label. Actually, you need to form. So this is part of Exhibit 1.
Okay, what sheet is that? That's
SP101.
Exhibit 4.
Exhibit 4.
Okay, so that's SP101, part of Exhibit 4. Thank you.
May I also have that sheet? This is sheet APA.3, and I believe that is the same exhibit.
Also part of Exhibit 4. Okay,
yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay. And part of that same exhibit, there are two other sheets I want to talk about. One sheet is APA.1, which is the first and second floor plan. And I'm going to turn the lake towards you all. I'm going to try not to bury your microphone here. And another sheet from your exhibit is APA.2, which is the roof plan. These were requested to have the 50-foot shoreline setback added to the upper floors. It was on the site plan, but it wasn't on each floor plan. And wisely, you asked us to show it on each floor plan. Okay. So, I think you should manage this. Bill said, originally when Bill approached us, his idea was to take the width of the shed in the house, maintain it in place, just fill out the corners, because this is more or less a cruciform shape with some voids. And his idea was, I think he thought that it would be the nicest to the neighbors if nothing exceeded that box. It made sense to us, but it became obvious that if, because of this shoreline setback in this area being sloped, in relationship to the corner of the building, the further you shift the building to the west, the less of the building we would do would encroach in the 50-foot setback on the upper portions. So that was brilliant on his point, on his behalf. You guys might have even suggested it, Tom. But that's what's on Bill's mind. Because of this diagonal, there's an advantage to minimize the requested relief. To that end, what we're requesting on the first floor pertains only, of course, to the area on the lake side of the 50-foot shoreline setback, which is a piece of the living room, a piece of the 6-foot porch, and a screen porch in the corner of the kitchen. And you can see that angle over here. So if we had shifted the house back east, that would have been aggravated a little bit more, because this shoreline setback keeps going rearward. And I wanted to get out our transparency. This is some part of the same exhibit. It's the site plan, which is from drawing SP101. I just put it to the same scale. Just wanted to point out to you that the way that the existing house is working with this is we're giving up this blue box here, and we're filling in these corners. We're giving up this shed. We're using that width over here. So again, it's not a lot of difference in area. It's the 250 feet of area, but it's filling out what was already circumscribed by the existing house. So from the neighbor's point of view, it's still compact. One of the things we're after is a compactness from the neighbor's point of view. On the second floor, the amount. This house is employing a wedding cake effect. I don't know if you're familiar with that term. But from an architect's point of view, that means that the second floor appears to be smaller than the first floor, as if a wedding cake had a lower tier that was wide and the next tier got smaller and subsequently smaller and smaller. The reason why that is used is because visually that helps minimize the mass from the lake. Also, it's a wedding cake effect from the view directly from the north, from the lake, looking at the central gable. It's narrower than the rest of the house. It's only a third or less. And from the side, this is from the east, the house is set back as well. So it doesn't start getting taller until it's as far out of the 50-foot side yard setback as it can be. So the bulk of the house has been, as much as possible, forced behind the 50-foot setback to not only be a good neighbor to the people behind, but also from the lake, to minimize the mass of the house. On the other hand, what we're asking to do is to put part of this bedroom and a tiny bit of this bedroom, just a corner of this bedroom, on the lake side of the 50-foot shoreline setback, because anywhere else is going to do exactly what the David Dow family doesn't want to do. Number one, they can't go rearward, because their property line prevents them to do so. If they go east, they go in front of their neighbor. If they go west, they go in front of their neighbor. So this seemed to be the nicest possible way to not only minimize the mass from the lake, which I think is a high priority for the Adirondack Park Agency and to be a good neighbor for the whole community, but to be a good neighbor to the folks behind and beside them. And then on the roof, similarly, the piece of roof that we're talking about is not largely the portion that holds most of the second floor. It's just really the portion of the roof that holds that one bedroom that can't fit into this picture without ruining the neighbor's view if it goes east or west. So it went north. It went north to be a good neighbor, and it's really only a part of the bedroom. It's not the entire bedroom. The portions flanking on the east and west are very low, as you'll see in this exhibit, drawing APA 0.3. The portions of bedroom 3 roof and bedroom 5 roof are very low. They're just a few feet over the existing ridge. The existing ridge is about 1.5 feet below our top of plate. We have 18.7 feet, so the existing ridge is listed here. It has a 341.97-foot ridge height. We know that we can go by right 2 feet higher than that, so we could be at 345. These pieces of roof that protrude are barely over 345 on the east and west portions of the house. So we're really only talking about the center portion, and when you look at that objectively, we're talking about this triangle of the gable of bedroom number 4. And that is giving us light, it's giving us a beautiful room, and it's allowing us to see the mountains. The other comment about the roof form is we know that people build flat-roofed houses. There are some aesthetics that Bill alluded to. He hired us to give him, I think his words were, light, air, view, fit the family, and enjoy the community. But he also asked us to give him an Adirondack vernacular house. He asked for a house that was Adirondack style. So you have to stop and think, what does that mean today? A bulk of the houses in this neighborhood have been remodeled in a very modest way. The houses behind him are basically linear. The Sugar's house is the one that's linear and has a low-sloped roof. We could do that. We could have a box that looked like that. We could have a bar in the back, 50 foot, and have some height. And we could also flatten the roof up front. But it doesn't look good. From an aesthetic point of view, from an architect's point of view, what I want to do is I want to bring us back to the heyday of the Adirondacks. I feel like when I close my eyes and I wish for a vision of what does it mean to have a period piece in the Adirondacks, it's late 1800s, the heyday of wood hotels, the Sagamore Hotel, other hotels that have burned down. But I don't see something that looks like it rolled off of a truck. I don't see something that looks like a strip motel or a shipping container. I see something that's got a noble roof pitch, that has overhangs, that has detail. The overhangs give you shadow lines. So our visualizations from the lake and from the neighbors showed you some of the detail we had in mind. These elevations in this exhibit give an idea. I want to pull out something you've already seen. Actually, Bill has it from another exhibit. This is the same exhibit number 4. I excerpted this from the drawing number. Let me get you the drawing number. This was excerpted from drawing SP-700.
Okay.
Made it a little brighter. We unfortunately hadn't made that guy bright. So, again, you're seeing that Bill's focus is to have what he needs to fit his family and bring the family to the light and bring his family to lake views and have community space large enough in his house to at least fit the people who would sleep there. Right now you guys have basically 14 occupants.
12.
12 with future grandkids.
Right.
We obviously need a little bit of room on a rainy day to move around. We need a place to sit at a dining room table. We need rooms to sit in front of the fireplace. We need room to get out and get out of each other's elbows and actually walk to the outside. So this house is designed to conceal that size as well as possible, minimize it, and create shadow lines and details and porch details, overhangs, columns, brackets, chimneys, braces, to make this house feel like it's a noble wood structure from the late 1800s. It could have been other forms to be Adirondack, but it's purposely trying not to be 1930s. It's purposely trying not to be 1950s. The last thing Bill wants to do is to make something that really feels like a billboard that blocks his neighbors. And in my humble opinion, I believe that a steeper roof pitch makes a house look smaller. If I were to compare a New England barn to a modern riding ring, horse riding ring, a New England barn typically would have a nice steep pitch. And as big as those barns were, the steep pitch roof helps to mitigate the size of the walls. It gives character, it gives a noble hat, and it gives interest and detail, especially when the barn roof or building roof would turn and change directions and have other facets. This has 2 tiers and several facets. If you compare the New England barn roof to to a 4-on-12 pitch, like Butler Building, a commercial barn. It might have lower walls, but because of the unrelieved roof, that building can look very, very much like a warehouse, very much like a utility building. And that's the last thing that Bill and his family want out of this. They want something that looks like it's been there 100 years. They want something that looks compact enough to sprawl and block their neighbors. And because of the compactness and the consideration of the neighbors, that's why we're requesting the relief of the few feet in height for the noble peak of that roof and the details on that roof. And that's why everything flanking that has been pulled back as far as possible. Are we going to talk about the other approaches, the other considerations yet? Is this a good time?
No.
Okay, is there anything you want to add? One thing you mentioned to me, Michael, is that Bill still held the width of the building. So on this exhibit, site plan exhibit, SP101, when Bill moved it further westward, he took the east side as well. So now he's actually out of the Scherger's view corridor another 3 feet 4, which I appreciate. I understand that this is a smaller shed and this is a longer side of a house, but the reality is that actually improves the Scherger's view corridor from what they're accustomed to as far as clear view from the side of their shed to the trees. And I think that's going to be a net improvement for them. Okay. Part of your criteria is for us to demonstrate that there's no better way for us to accomplish this and that this is the minimum request for relief. The overarching reason why this is the best relief is because it's, in our opinion, a minimal intrusion, minimal request, but a maximal return for the neighbors and for the lake view. For the lake view, because of the compact form and the wedding-caked roof and the noble architecture. For the neighbors, because of the compact form. The alternatives that we looked at, 3-story version house. We can fit a lot if we stay behind the 50-foot line, put our porches just in the existing footprint, our 1-story porches in the existing footprint. We can fit a lot, but we can't fit a lot nicely. This becomes something that looks like a very vertical mineshaft elevator shaft. You guys have received that drawing in exhibit. This is ours, this is ours, this is your APAs, APAs.
Probably exhibit 6.
No. Yeah. Oh, under me. Exhibit 6. Thank you. Obviously, one can build tall buildings and fit more square footage, except in this case, there's a deed restriction that prohibits us from going to a third floor. But not so obviously, the 3-story approach is really unfriendly to the neighbors because it intensely dwarfs the other buildings around. That's why there's the covenant restrictions to keep things at 2 stories. There are other buildings in Bill's community that are 2 stories, 2.5 stories. The APA is familiar with some of them, I'm sure. We saw some on our boat ride when we were with Mr. Seyrig and Engineer Lalonde. and so you're aware of some other ones that we might not have seen at the time. The 3-story building is skinny and long. It's wide. It looks like it belongs in an urban block, and it changes the character from the lake, from being what you had seen in the visualization in exhibit number 4. It changes our house from being in context to being intensely tall. Right? I'm sure there's better adjectives, but we'll use intensely tall. Okay, that was good. I want wanted you to compare this to Exhibit 4, drawing SP703.1 and SP703. So a winter view from the lake. You can see the heights of the buildings around. There are two-story buildings, two-and-a-half-story buildings. And there's the existing David Out Camp, which is a one-story building. When we bring our building and put it into context, it's in keeping with the adjacent buildings that you see over here to the east. And there's other ones around the points that are also two stories and up. So a third story on this visualization would be intensely out of character. So the character is best served by retaining the two-story heights, and that the deeds would prevent us from exploring three stories. When we look at taking a two-story approach and moving more of it behind the 50-foot setback, what we do is we move it into the neighbor's view corridor to the east, we move it into the wetlands to the east, we move it into the neighbor's view corridor to the west. So there's no real gain for the neighborhood when we do that. And certainly from the lake, this more compact Victorian style, period style, 1880s massing of a house seems to be much more in keeping than doing something that's long and tall, wide and tall. Let me put this back in the right place. Okay. Am I missing anything?
No.
Okay. I think I'm done.
Okay. Kevin, do you want to talk about just what the environmental piece?
Okay, again, just for the record, for someone listening, this is Kevin Hastings, engineer for the applicant.
Yeah. We prepared a hydrology analysis, and that's part of the record that basically showed that there's no change in the net runoff flowing through the site. It's about a 2-acre watershed. The net gain of impervious based on the architectural plans, we had a net gain of 545 square feet, and that's impervious, which could be roof area, could be walkways, and that's taking into consideration the areas that existed, which is in the engineering report diagram SC1, which was part of Exhibit 6 with the engineering report and details, and compared to the proposed impervious areas, which were delineated carefully on SC-2 of the engineering report, that's where we come up with the net change of impervious. And that's a number that we use for water quality treatment as opposed to just runoff management, because again, there's no change in the hydrology, even up to the 500-year storm. It's just there's no runoff through this property, and the net gain of impervious does not add to that water reaching the lake. So our focus on the erosion sediment control plan was to show silt fencing, perimeter silt fencing, and then we also added a wetland protection fence to separate the construction area from the delineated wetland area. And that's in detail 1 on sheet L1 of the engineering design report. And then there's a stabilized construction entrance, which is a temporary measure for tracking dust control for any vehicles coming and going from the site during construction. Both that and the silt fence would be removed upon completion of the site work, and the lawn and turf areas restored to vegetated condition. For the water quality treatment, we focused on the net change of impervious area, and we looked to the DEC standards for water quality treatment. And in this site application, a rain garden became the feasible choice for design. Initially, we had calculated for the 545 square foot of impervious added to the site plan, two rain gardens were prescribed, and they are 3 feet by 15 feet in length. And the detail is shown, detail 5 on drawing L1. In response to staff comments, we took another look at the site plan and added two additional rain gardens, and they are located generally in the northwest corner and the northeast corner of the proposed structure. Two facing the lake and one on each side of the dwelling, and that's in detail 2 on L1. And they're located there more because that's where the rain water runoff from the roof, the drip eaves are along those edges. And also beneficial due to sunlight, and that's good for the plants and other things that are in the rain garden to help that function properly. The south side of the roof area is generally drained to Albert Way, the roadway that's there. That's an existing runoff, and there's really no opportunity there to do much treatment. However, we have suggested that perhaps roof gutters could be added at a later date if there's erosion or other problems with runoff, that the owner could add those to the design. We submitted today Exhibit 15, which is an updated drawing of L1 showing the wetland protection as a silt fence. And we also responded in a letter format explanation of the additional two rain gardens, basically doubling the minimum requirement of water quality treatment, and the suggestion about a roof gutter system at a future date if necessary.
Okay.
Keith, if I could just sum up then.
Certainly, sir.
I think that the relief that's been requested, I think by hearing what you've heard today, is minimal. It's 250 square feet on the ground, but offset by almost 700 of other pervious and improvements. And for net gain for the lake, we think also it's, again, when you compare what we could have done if we went beyond 50 feet, we could have done a lot of damage, both to neighbors and to the environment and to the view, but we opted to go through this process to get it done right. The neighbors approve it, and it doesn't impact them. All four, I'm sure if we ask my mother for a letter back there, she'd give us a letter. That would be 5 out of 5. There are, as Andrew indicated, no real alternatives that don't do damage to the neighbors or damage aesthetically to the lakefront, and it is lakefront. It's not hidden back in the woods. The law is, the hardship results from the law being in effect retroactive, applying to people who have already purchased their property. It's not as if we bought in disregard for the rules, not as if we bought in ignorance of the rules. The rules didn't exist when we purchased. I think lastly, environmentally, as Kevin has described, we've, I think, satisfied all the requirements. And on the environmental, we've done the studies. Kevin's been out there a couple of times. Whatever is needed environmentally, we're fine on it. Construction-wise or post-construction, where we're finding the environmental part. So I think that addresses all the criteria, and that's why we would respectfully request that the board, that the staff recommend the variance and that the board grant it.
Thank you, sir. That was very thorough. Is there any questions for clarification from agency staff?
I have just a few. In any of the four individuals who have been sworn in can answer these questions. Part of this is just to make sure the record is complete so that board members aren't there sitting trying to figure out why couldn't they have done this or that. And the one thing I wanted to ask about in terms of the non-jurisdictional alternative, in other words, building behind a setback. We know that you've got deed covenants that restrict going up three stories, but I just wanted to, maybe if you could just elaborate again on why two stories behind a setback wouldn't work. As I understand it, you're saying that it would have to wing out and it would impact your neighbor's view for you to get the bedrooms that you're proposing. Am I correct?
Yes. So we're measuring SP101 from Exhibit 4.
43.6.
The proposed house is 43.8 wide, more or less. In 43 feet, I'm trying to make a six-bedroom house. I'm trying to make living space for a six-bedroom house. If you assume that each bedroom could be fit into a nominal width of 15 feet if you accounted for closets, if we pretended this was a motel. If I had 15 feet between motel rooms, 14 feet net and 15 feet. If I wanted to get two motel rooms on the bottom and four motel rooms on the second floor and keep in the width that exists, I would need 60 feet in width to get four rooms side by side. So what we've done is figure out a house width that works with three bedrooms on the second floor, three bedrooms width. I can't easily get the living space in two bedrooms on the first floor at all without being in the neighbor's face. If you take the existing living space, it happens to be 40 feet wide, but let's say you took the 30 feet and you added two bedrooms and the appropriate closet, I would need to add approximately 30 feet to the downstairs of this house to achieve this, and I really would ruin the Schroeder's view corridor or really ruin the Rips view corridor. So it's not that it can't be done, it's that it, despite the intent of how the law is written, the variance law is written, it's the best solution for being a good neighbor. You can't fit as much family space as we need to support the day with the family here. We can't fit that in the space remaining. So it's mostly a width issue. Clearly, if this was a wider lot and there was no neighbors whose view would be obscured, we would do that. But you saw from the exhibit that Bill showed you from the aerial with the view corridors, this is there isn't much width to expand without being a bad neighbor. As far as that one bedroom, really what we're asking for is the variance for pretty much a half of a bedroom and a couple little pieces. So let's say a bedroom on the second floor over the 50-foot setback line. That's really the crux of what we're asking for. We're asking for a one bedroom with a noble roof in that area. If you take that bedroom off there and you put it to either left or right side, east or west side, it doesn't work. It's not a friendly building to the neighbors. It technically can fit and not interrupt. We could probably make that fit up to the wetland setback, but we would be entire building envelope built as a billboard, and that's not the intent here. The intent is to keep it open. That's the biggest criteria that keeps us from exploring pushing the building anything new behind the 50-foot setback. We can't fit it.
Okay. Thank you. Another question, and again, whichever one of you wants to answer this, it relates to parking. As you know, we received one anonymous comment letter and then a letter today from a Mr. Wilkins, who's an attorney representing Kapuscinski family. And I know you have not had a chance to thoroughly read that letter, nor have we at this point, but the bottom line is that it alleges there isn't adequate parking available if the house is allowed to be replaced with the size proposed in the variance. And I just wondered if you would address that comment.
Sure. And we'll maybe talk after about what kind of written response, if any, we do for the Kapuscinski letter. But basically, the parking right now is in right next to the house. It fits two cars right next to the house along the road. And the parking is in part on the property, and it is in part on the road. It's a mix. There's only more than one or two cars, really two weekends a year, July 4th and Labor Day. Otherwise, it's just one or two cars. If we need excess parking, we park at my mother's house, which is right across the effectively catty corner to where we are, which is where we will park the extra cars. But it happens, you know, it happens very infrequently. Some of us fly, some of us come up in one car. I mean, if we have 12 people sleeping, then we don't have 12 cars. And in fact, the car situation is not going to change at all. It's what it's always been. And all we will have is sleeping space for the people that are in the cars. There's no change to what the practice has been. The easement, the road, the so-called road, which the community owns, not the Kapuscinski's, is approximately 20 feet wide. The gravel part maybe only looks 10 feet, but in fact, the road easement is we measured it the other day. It's approximately 20 feet wide. So there's plenty of room there to have a car park part and still get past it. There are only two houses past it. Both houses have approved this plan. So there's no access issue for those two weekends a year. We, like every other family up there, scrambled a little bit for parking. We happen to have the luxury of having my mother's house across the street. For example, this weekend, that's where I parked when there were more than two cars. And there were more than two cars this weekend. I parked at my mother's house. And from time to time, somebody, like many of the people in the community, will park in the beach parking lot, which is owned by the community. But that's an extremely irregular, like I said, two weekends a year. So this won't change anything about the parking. We're not going to have more people come here because of this. If we put this house up, we'll just have, they just won't have to sleep on the floor, or they won't have to be outside in tents. They won't have to be, you know, sleeping at their friend's house and just winging it. That's the difference. There's not going to be a car change. There's not going to be a parking change. Even if there is room next to the house to do a parking pad, I don't think a parking pad is what, I don't think a pad or gravel is what the APA wants, number one. Number two, it's going to be right in our neighbor's view, which is not something we would do.
Just a follow-up, if you do have a parking issue and it became an issue down the road, you do have land on one side of the house if you needed it to put a parking area.
Well, we do, but it would be right in our neighbor's view. I mean, and again, if we needed that, we would have already done it, but we really don't need it. As a matter of fact, I'm saying there are two cars behind the house. It's possible that could fit three cars. I mean, it's very rare that we ever get there. But it fits two very easily, and the neighbors come and go. And like I said, the two neighbors on either side, I mean, not on either side, the two neighbors past us. And it's a dead end, and it's never going to be open. It's a permanent dead end. And those two neighbors are fine on it. And we wouldn't want to do a parking pad in front of their house. We really wouldn't. Nor would they be in favor of that. You know, honestly, like any community up here these days, parking is an issue for the entire community. It's not isolated to this house or to how many bedrooms it has. Right, the beach parking is, it's our lot. I mean, the beach parking is owned by the community.
So it's this is a, if the community didn't want overflow parking there, it could say so. But so far, it's not been an issue. Yeah, we own it. The community owns it. The Kapuscinski's don't own it. But I'll respond to that some other way.
I could just have a moment.
Sure.
We have no further questions.
Okay. At this point, then, we will ask counsel to swear in staff who's going to provide testimony. And we'll have agency staff testimony. And then you guys, if you have any questions for clarification, you'll be able to ask. Please proceed.
Okay, the staff intends to call Thomas Sayrig. Mr. Sayrig, please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in this matter?
Yes, I do.
And please state your name and title for the record.
Thomas Sayrig. I'm Environmental Program Specialist 2 with the Adirondack Park Agency.
How long have you been an Environment Program Specialist too?
I've been at the agency for over 24 years.
And would you please explain your general duties and your capacity as an Environmental Program Specialist at the APA?
I'm part of the regulatory division of the agency. I am assigned various projects, from large-scale projects to smaller-scale projects. I'm assigned variances. I'm assigned state agency projects. My responsibilities are to review the application for completeness and request additional information if necessary. At some point when the application is complete, I would be making a staff recommendation to the Director of Regulatory Programs or the agency board for action on the project. I'm also responsible to coordinate with our scientific unit, our legal unit, our planning division, local government services, and other divisions at the agency to make sure that the recommendation to the director or the board is a staff recommendation. I serve under the executive staff, which I also report to.
Okay. Thank you. I'm now showing you, and I assume you, this particular variance application, could you explain in general your review of this application? In other words, have you been assigned to it from the beginning, or have you shared that responsibility?
Initially, I was contacted by Mr. Davidow years ago about the possibility of constructing a dwelling or replacing existing dwelling. That conversation sort of went dead. At one point, Mr. Davidow requested a pre-application meeting. We had that meeting with his authorized representatives, architects, and engineers. Then at on December 22nd of 2015, an application was received by the agency for the variance. I shared that with other staff at the agency. They provided questions and comments on the application. We asked for additional information. That additional information was received around February 25th, 2016. Again, that was shared with other staff at the agency. We had various meetings, and we requested, the director of our division requested an additional alternatives analysis at that point, and we received that information on May 16th of 2016, which virtually completed the application. During the review of the project, I was aware, I got some phone calls or comment letters on it. As late as today, we received a separate comment letter. But at this point, once we received the information on May 16th, the staff recommended that we determine that the application was ready to conduct a public hearing. And so I've been responsible to gather the exhibits, have staff consultations on it, and here we are at the hearing today. So I'm very familiar with all the information that's been provided. I've read every piece of paper, looked at every plan sheet, looked at visual assessments, looked at alternatives, and evaluated the information.
I'm going to now show you what's been marked as Exhibit 12, and it's actually, it's Exhibit 12, lettered A through T, and ask you if you recognize this exhibit.
Yes, I do. These are photographs that were taken during our initial site investigation with agency staff and the applicants and their consultants on July 7th, 2015.
Okay. And what I would like to do is, if you could, would you be able to go through each of these photos and just briefly describe it for the record?
Yes, I can. I will tell you that, honestly, it's a little difficult orienting yourself on this site because the lake is actually to the north of the property. So to the right would be the east and to the left is the south. And I get confused on the orientation because I generally speak of Lake George running north and south. The first photograph, 12A, is viewing to the south or the west, or you want to describe it, of the lake. It's a view from the David Owens front lawn area, showing the mountains in the distance, and you can slightly see a boathouse and boat to the west of the property. The second photograph, 12B, is looking to the east, showing the Lake George with an island and mountains in the view shed and some boats along the shoreline. One of the things in doing this site visit, we started, and I'm looking at Exhibit 10, which shows the Hewlett's Landing configuration, land use boundaries. Hewlett's Landing is a series of bays, and we started from the David Owes residence and went to the east up to where there's a marina, and then we proceeded back down along the shoreline to the east, where there's a second bay, which is more developed. And that's where we took the photographs from, I would say, a few hundred feet, 200 to 500 feet off the shoreline. So these two photographs are just the views looking north. And
so that's 12A and 12B.
12A and 12B. Then we also took photographs of the neighbors' houses that are to the south of the David Owes camp, to document what they look like and also to interpret their view sheds of the lake during that site visit. So Exhibit 12C is one of the houses on the other side of Albert Way. I think it's to the west. Exhibit 12D shows that house is to the east. Exhibit 12D shows the view shed that house has from the Albert Way. And Exhibit 12E is another house to the west, southwest of the David Owes residence, and it shows the view shed that they have from Albert Way looking towards Lake George. Then after those photographs were taken, we got into a boat. Well, first, before we did that, I took a photograph of the David Owes boathouse, which is Exhibit 12F. It shows beyond that to the east is another series of boathouses, and you can see the marina in the background. So once we took those photographs, we got into a boat that Mr. David Owes provided and went out onto the lake. The first photograph, 12G, is a photograph taken of the David Owes residence, which has a blue tarp on it, and shows the adjoining neighbors' dwellings also. Exhibit 12H is a photograph to the east of the David Owes residence showing a boathouse in what I would assume to be a replacement house set back off the shoreline. Exhibit 12I is going further east, and it shows a very long brown house with a white boat at a dock, and that I would assume also was a replacement dwelling. It's certainly not a circa 1950 camp. So we assumed, and I think Mr. David Owes explained, that had been replaced in the recent past. Exhibit 12J is a photograph showing on the right-hand side the marina that's in Hewlett's Landing, and then I believe a residence that's on the point next to that marina. Photograph 12K.
Can I see, look at that one?
Exhibit 12K is the house immediately to the west of the David House. It's the adjoining property owner that has shoreline on the lake. It's a large white dwelling. Exhibit 12L is another photograph taken from land beyond the David House lawn area, looking to the west, showing the adjoining landowner's boathouse, and then there's some docks beyond that with two boats parked at it. Shows the intent of these photographs was to understand the character of the area and the character of the shoreline and Hewlett's Landing, and certainly that boathouse and boats represent a vast majority of the shoreline and Hewlett's Landing. Exhibit 12M shows the common area owned by the association, which has a beach in open space land, which I believe Mr. David O was involved in the early resolution of some issues there. Exhibit 12N is further to the west. There's a point of land that has a dock, boathouse, a house. I'm not sure if that was a replacement, but I may assume that that could be a replacement dwelling on the point of land. Then as you boat around that point, you come to another little bay area. It's Exhibit 12O that shows basically a shoreline full of boats, docks, and residential development along the shoreline. And the next series of photos in that are located in that same bay. Exhibit 12P shows very similar dwellings. There's certainly a couple two-story dwellings. There's boats and docks. And I believe that the majority of these dwellings are replacement dwellings that more than likely occurred before the 2008 law change. Exhibit 12Q is along the same bay. It's further to the west, and it shows two-story dwellings, some boats and docks, and the existing development along that shoreline. Exhibit 12R continues along that bay and shows another two-story dwellings and a couple single-story dwellings and boathouse and or boat docks and boats. Exhibit 12S continues along that shoreline to the west and it consists of a brown one-and-a-half-story dwelling and a yellow and red one-and-a-half to two-story dwelling along the shoreline. It also shows retaining wall, docks, boats, another boathouse and boats. And it demonstrates the character of the shoreline in this. I'm showing you two bays out of several bays in Hewlett's Landing. The other bays, not the two that I'm showing, do have various docks, boathouses, and dwellings along them. The last exhibit is 12T, and that's further west along that bay, and it certainly shows a yellow two-story dwelling with a dock and boat area with a canopy over it, and then another dwelling setback that appears to be a two-story dwelling, and it has a wood-frame boathouse with two stalls right at the shoreline. Obviously, the boathouses and docks are in the lake, within the mean high water mark of Lake George.
And just, you indicated you took those July 7th, 2015?
Yes. There were other APA staff and the David House in the boat with us at the time.
Okay. Thank you. No further questions.
Okay. Any questions of agency staff?
No, sir.
No?
Okay. Do you wish to show me other photos?
Okay. Okay, at this point in time, you're come to public comment. Is there anyone who would like to make a comment for the record? Okay. Hearing none, we have an opportunity for a closing statement before we close the hearing.
I already made mine.
You sure did. You good?
I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good.
Well, thank you very much. This will conclude today's hearing on the application for a request of variance. The record will remain open until receipt of the final determination from the Office of Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation regarding this particular matter. The record will then be forwarded to the agency members for their deliberation and final decision. We anticipate, hope, that would be August. So thank you all for your time. It was very thorough. And this will close our hearing.
Thank you.